Thanks for staying on with us on Astro Awani. This is, of course, the economies of the election. This is a sub-show of Notepad. We're running this show throughout the campaign period and, of course, perhaps even after the polling day. It's 4 days to go for the November 19th election date. In the studio with me right now is Dr. Nungsari Ahmad Radi, a very renowned economist and a rather prolific Twitterer, I suppose, joining me online on Twitter. But of course, Dr. Nungsari has a career spanning over 3 decades. He was previously the chairman of MAVCOM over at Kerai Institute. He was a former MP at Balik Pulau back in 1995. Five. Doctor. And of course, he has been outspoken on many issues, particularly on issues on reform and of economic issues. And of course, what better person to talk about this, because he has no stake in the game. So now let's talk about some of the key items that our, I guess, candidates are not talking about and the coalitions are not talking about, which is, of course, economic headwinds and economic issues. Doctor, we've heard a lot of rhetorics about how they're going to clean up the system, reform, do a lot of things, but not necessarily in detail. One of the key items that we really need to look at is how the government is going to be funding these kind of projects. We know that our household debt is actually quite high, 90% if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, GDP. Yeah.
GDP, of GDP. We're looking at development budget not being the biggest in the previous budget, but we don't see how it's going to be financed. We don't know how the government is going to widen the tax base, which is rather narrow. And of course, the ever, you know, worrisome three-letter word for any incumbent government, which is GST. How do you see the government, the new government in place, entering this space and trying to tackle these issues while trying to remain popular, which is essentially the point of doing this in the first place?
So, thank you for having me. I think the easier part is actually the short-term ones, which is to provide some sort of social safety net. Mm. So I think everybody had a lot of ideas for that, just to give, to provide, and all these things.
Malaysia National is suggesting, through Zaid Amidi, suggesting UBI, Universal Basic Income. How do you find that?
Well, they just define the first part without saying the second part. So everybody is doing the first part, which is actually the more populist part, which is these are the things I can give, which actually are essential in the short term. The second part is actually how to finance this, how to finance this, and how to also revamp and reform the fiscal situation. And that's somewhat missing. And the third one, which is the more equally painful one, is actually how to restructure and change the economy in the longer term. That some people have some ideas. So actually, the first one is the easy bit. So I think the demand side on the political market should force them to talk a bit more on the second and the third one, which is actually fiscal reform, how to pay for all these things, how to reform the state of government finances. And the third one is actually how to actually change the structure of the economy, our competitiveness, so that in the longer term, we have better jobs, more jobs, and address the lower income.
You've been on the campaign circuit, albeit in the 90s. You know how the electoral feels, particularly in terms of the campaigning period. It is emotive, most likely than not. Do you feel that it is better for these candidates to cough up the kind of painful reforms that needs to be done?
No. So that's leadership, right? I mean, I think for the last 20 years, since the 1998 Asia financial crisis, I think we've lacked the leadership that's forthright on the second matter and the third matter. Everybody's focusing on the
populism.
On the populism. And that's why the we find ourselves, you know, in 22 consecutive year of budget deficits.
Yes.
Debt about 1.2, 1.3 trillion ringgit.
Yes.
Because we've been doing that. And then we've seen that investment as a percentage of GDP has been declining for the last 20 years.
Yes.
So because the private sector is not convinced that the government is serious about managing its own affairs, and it needs to have a sense of confidence that there is not just property rights, but also the enablers that would convince me to put money here.
So now, following that,
but that's not what the electorate wants to hear, right, for the most part.
Not all electorates.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to hear this.
Yes.
I mean, even right now, I don't know who to vote in my constituency in Sungai Buloh. Honestly, I really don't know.
Yeah.
For the lack of better reason, I don't like the party, I like the man, and I don't like the man, I like the party, quite simply put. Yeah. And I just need to hear plans. The thing about this is that one of the candidates, at least in my constituency, is providing those plans, and therefore I am allured to him. I feel that I am attracted to him being one to be in the parliament.
Yeah.
But I am not 32 million Malaysians, aren't I?
But it's also the case that the one MP that you're going to vote for, notwithstanding that he or she might have some good plans, it has to be done through the parliamentary process, which means, you know, it has to be, in the way that we do things here, it has to be a party agenda rather than an MP agenda.
And let's talk about parliamentary reforms then.
Yeah.
Being in the parliament, you've been there, back when UMNO was everything.
Yes.
And now UMNO is, you know, I just tweeted it out. UMNO has not won the popular vote since 2013.
Yes.
It doesn't look likely at all that they're going to get the popular vote this time around as well.
Yeah.
So the death of UMNO in terms of popularity is clear and evident.
Yeah.
So even if UMNO or BN wants to do something, it's very difficult for them to do it. They have to do it with their partners.
Yes.
This goes with all the other coalition members as well.
Yes.
How do you form good governance, especially reform agenda, through coalition building? It's very difficult, isn't it?
No, I think we've gone past the period where a single party or a single coalition is able to command 70% of the seats.
Mm.
So from here on, until we reach a certain stability in terms of the equilibrium, it has to be sort of a coalition forming legislation, right?
Mm.
So it's more about defining what is palatable in order to get the right numbers to actually get that through Dewan Rakyat.
Mm.
So it has to be that. So that's why the parliamentary process itself, the legislative process itself, has to be more deliberative and more inclusive in terms of the consent that you get and the trade-off that you have to get between the parties.
Because you've been inside the August House. What would be the two or three parliamentary reforms that you think is urgently needed, and further two or three reforms that you think must be done over the longer period of time?
I think the one thing that was on the table in the Ismail Sabri thingy with the opposition was actually to have a separate parliamentary services commission. You know, it's kind of ironic that the entity that's supposed to oversee the cabinet reports to a member of the cabinet, right? So you have to separate that first. Then that's one. And secondly, I think you need to actually change standing orders, because the way legislation is done has to be more deliberative. It cannot just be, I put this a bill
motion,
on the table,
on the docket,
and then the MP is. Then the minister have first reading, second reading, and then it goes to committee, which is the same thing, and it gets passed. So it has to be more deliberative than that. There were beginnings of something like that for that smoking bill
Generation Endgame.
Generation Endgame. So it was tabled, it was debated, then it was referred to committee, then it came back, and the committee was bipartisan. Of course, the whole plenary was whatever the composition is. So that has to be more deliberative. And in order for that to happen, the standing orders have to change. So if we change the nature of institutions, then personalities matter less, right?
Because the process supersedes the personalities.
Yeah. And then I think the people will then say, I'm going to elect somebody who has to do all this stuff, right? So I cannot be electing jokers and people who don't attend parliament or people who are not able to represent at least my philosophy, my constituency interest in the legislation process. So we have to shift the way parliament is being perceived. You know, Wakil Rakyat is not just somebody solving
communities. The local issues,
Local issues, that's local government. So maybe one the other reform is there should be some sort of a formal ombudsman committee or intergovernmental whatever thingy that can channel, problems at the federal level are very different than the state level. And of course, the closer government is local government levels.
Yeah.
Most people are complaining about this bit, but they're coming here.
Yeah.
So one should have a proper mechanism that allows people here to sort of ensure that these things are done properly.
The mechanism is that we have MPs, we have we have state assemblymen and women, and Majlis, Ali Majlis. Except two of the three is elected, the Ahli Majlis isn't, which is another reform that we need to talk about, that mayors should be elected.
Yeah, and Ahli Majlis.
And Ahli Majlis, councillors, local councillors should be elected as well. Yeah. I'm for that, by the way, because nobody should get that just because, you know, of their proximity to political powers.
There's more money in local government than in state governments.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay. One short break before we continue our conversation with Dr. Musari. Thanks for staying on with me. I have with me Dr. Nusari Ahmad Radi, a rather prolific economist, talking about reforms and some of the things that we need to talk about in this particular campaign. 4 days to go, not much left. In fact, 4 days is actually 3 days because it's already like malam already of the fourth day. So within the next 3 days, do you feel that all these reforms that we speak about, and by the way, we've just scratched the surface. We're talking about political reform. We haven't talked about any other, all the other reforms that is needed. But it seems like based on the manifesto that has been presented by the three coalitions, Pakatan Harapan is very interested in the reforms, not so much Barisan Nasional and Perikatan Nasional. And I don't know whether this is a tactical move by the two of the three coalitions, because they need to win the hearts and minds of the rural and sub-rural votes, particularly the Malay votes. Do you feel that this is going to be a winning strategy for Barisan Nasional and Perikatan Nasional in that sense?
Well, you know, as far as manifestos are concerned, incumbents have a bit of a disadvantage, right?
Yeah.
Because you can't say, I'll do this, I'll do that, because then people will turn around and say, why haven't you done that? Because you were in power. So so they, tactically, strategically, they should then focus more on the more populist stuff.
53 out of 222 possible winners are not contesting. In the 14th parliamentary election, one of them is in prison, which is Datuk Seri Najib Razak. One of them is retiring from politics, Lim Kit Siang, who has been Malaysia's longest running MP as well as it's interesting, yeah.
Continuously, he lost.
Because Tun Mahathir wasn't running in the, if I'm not mistaken, 14th or
69, he lost.
No, 14th and 50 set out.
Set out.
Other trivias include 3/4 of the MPs are incumbents in running from the 14th general election to the 15th general election. Yeah. So yes, do you think that because of this, 3/4 of an MP, that is possible MPs, might be punished in this electoral polls?
I don't know about that, but I really hope the young voters, the first-time voters, the voters even in the 20s, should come out and vote, because that's the only way. You see, if you take out the 18 to 21 from the equation, you're going to get the same outcome, right? The only way you're going to get the same outcome if you add in the 18 to 21 to the pot. And I hope they will come in, and some of them, the younger ones, would win.
Here's a very interesting poll that was shared by BFM Radio, actually. If everyone who voted in 14th general election came out to vote for the 15th general election, it would only constitute 58%
of the
total possible electoral
today
vote.
Yeah. For this one.
So if everybody who voted in 14th general election, which is 82% in the 14th general election, voted again in the 15th, we won't hit 82% again. We would hit 58%.
Because you need this group.
Yes, we need this group. And then the absolute figure is 6 million that is added on to the 15 million that we saw previously, resulting in the total electoral vote to be 21 million.
Yeah.
1 million of that 6 million confirm will not vote. Why I know? Because they are under 24 and under, they are working or studying in Peninsular Malaysia and they are from Sabah, Sarawak,
okay.
It is cost prohibitive for them to go back and they are not allowed postal vote or early voting, therefore resulting in them not coming
able
back,
to vote.
Not able to vote.
Yeah.
So 1 million out of 5 million will not, dah out dah.
Okay.
So we're looking at a possible pool of 5 million out of the 6 million.
And you need a higher than 80% percentage on them just to get back to the percentage.
The percentage of the average.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which is 82% or more for the 5 million.
Yes.
So we're looking at 4 million out of 5 million.
Is that likely?
It's not.
Yeah?
It's not likely.
It's not likely. So, but I hope they by and large.
I want to be proven wrong, by the way. I want to eat my own words, and I want somebody to come on my show and say, "Hey, you guessed it wrong, and you should eat your humble pie." I want that.
I
don't think I will.
But you saw the recent midterm U.S. elections. By and large, the results were surprising to most people because the younger people came out in numbers that were. They were higher than estimated. To be honest with you, if you go to vote, saluran 1, 2, 3, the reliable vote banks are the older ones.
Yeah, saluran 1, 2, 3.
1, 2, 3. So the
4
the
and 5, perhaps even 6.
Yeah, are not reliable. But I like to be, like you, I like to be proven wrong that saluran 5, 6, 7 turnout will be higher. Because otherwise, we're not going to have any change. Because you're drawing from the same pot, right? And then expecting a different outcome? I don't think so.
Yeah. And of course, we're looking at the 5 million of the 6 million of the Undi 18 are coming from Peninsular Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps the prohibitive element here is that they don't have the transportation to go back to their homeland or hometown.
Yeah.
Homeland to Malaysia lah kan? hometown. So, but it's still contiguous land. I think they can make their way home. We've just heard news this morning that Plus is making the toll free for 1, if not 2 days.
Yeah.
Do you think this will help?
It helps a bit, but I'm a bit disappointed by this Sabah and Sarawak students are not allowed to do postal voting if they're here, right? And because of that, 1 million. Of them will not be able to vote because it's prohibitive just to take a flight back.
It's 1,000 plus. If you are working, you are probably working 3,000, 3,500.
Yeah.
Are you willing to forego 40% of your salary?
No.
For a one-day excursion?
No. And that's unfortunate. But I hope enough of the numbers come out to change the not just the outcome but also the kind of promise or the kind of exertion of on pressure on the incumbents, because otherwise you're not going to have much incentive to change.
To recap, what Dr. Nungsari was referring to just now was the so-called red wave that the Republican Party was banking on, particularly when Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump appealing to the different bases of the Republican Party wanted to see a red wave coming. That red wave did not come, largely because those of the younger constituency voted overwhelmingly Democrat. And resulting in the Democrats retaining the Senate as of last count, 50 seats to 48 as of last count. I don't think they will get more than that, as in Democrats. So the Democrats will be having the tiebreaker plus one of the vice president. This is not what many pollsters were expecting. Yeah. In fact, some of the pollsters, including YouGov, was talking about the only possibility of the Democrats retaining the upper chamber of the Houses of Congress is only if, there's a big asterisk, if the young turned out. Turns out the young did turn
they
out.
They did. So I'm a half full kind of, half the glass is half full kind of guy.
Of course you are, Dr. Nusari. So you think they will?
Because otherwise what's the point of getting old and being hopeful?
Yeah. Okay, finally, 3 more days to go. What do you think the voters need to think about, particularly when it comes to bread and butter issues, cost of living, rising food cost, wages? Oh my God, wages!
I really hope the electorate sort of step back, and actually can see that a lot of bread and butter issues like low wages, you know, cost of living and stuff like are actually related to somewhat more abstract stuff, like, you know, integrity of institution, corruption, the function, how government function, competencies and capabilities matters. So it's not, these things are not independent from the more abstract stuff. And I hope if the electorate step back, they can see that actually these are related matters, and they should then apply that standards to the calon who are contesting, and insist that they too would have that conversation. Anybody promising you just this and not this is lying.
Okay, let's talk about some of the abstract stuff before we terminate our conversation here, or we adjourn, not terminate, adjourn. Domestic demand was the one that was driving third quarter GDP to 14%.
Yeah.
Some would argue that this is good, others would argue that this is overheating the economy, resulting in an OPR increase inevitable to reach beyond pre-COVID levels. Mm. This also pushes many of us to get those very, you know, angry kind of notifications from the banks telling us all our repayments are going up. Hmm. Baru je buka pagi tadi. Do you feel that because of this, we have to still continue to rely on domestic demand because foreign investments are not coming in, foreign demand is not coming in. It's very hard for us to export. Maybe E&E is okay. Other sectors might be having serious issues.
I think in the middle to longer term, the only way that we can get out of this low income regime and low wage regime, if that more and more Malaysian firms gets to be more competitive in the export market, it doesn't matter, it's not global, it can just be Indonesia, it can be Singapore, then they would grow and cater to the part of the demand curve that's a higher income than the rather low income that we have. You know, if you expect Malaysian companies to pay more, and then if they are just reliant on domestic economy, which is characterized by a median household income of 6,000 ringgit, I don't think they can pay the kind of wages that people deserve and expect. So they have to be competitive outside. So then we have to think, how do we create firms who are able to create products that are competitive in the export market? So they have to have the right enablers, which is human capital, you know, efficiency of capital in this country and things of that sort. So this outlook of looking out has to be one of the key things. I think for the last 10, 15 years, we've been somewhat domesticated, right? We've been talking about domestic issues and we've lost our what we used to be, which is actually a trading nation, a very open, small economy, but we have a very open outlook.
Wide horizon.
Yes. So we have to return to that. We have to get rid of this somewhat parochial, you know,
narrow biopic view.
Yeah. I think that's very important. It's not easy to convey to voters, but actually that's what we're looking for. We're looking for leaders who are able to lead to a better place. And they have to be honest about these things. But unless they are ignorant of this, then, you know, they shouldn't be around to begin with.
My paternal side, of course, is Minangkabau. They are very lopsided towards men to leave the house.
Yeah,
the
woman administers domestic affairs. Yeah. But we have to get that hijrah, you know, if not just...
Hijrah what? From Petaling Jaya to Bukit Jalil. That's as much as I can do. But of course, many more that needs to be done and many more that needs to be discussed. That was our conversation with Dr. Nung Sari Maradi. Of course, he is an economist here in Malaysia. He is, of course, a big commentator on Twitter. Do follow him at Nung Sari. A lot of stuff that he comments
there
as well. We are very near to the polling day. There's a lot of our internal polls that we are doing as well. Do check that out. Every time it comes out on the screen, there's a QR code. Scan that as well. And perhaps your voice on these matters can be heard so that we can better reflect your stories and your views to our audience. In the meantime, continue to stay with us on Astro Awani, your 15th general election channel.